Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My non-random repeat guest, I'm having a lot of repeat guests, is Joe Rosenstiel. Joe, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me again.
I'm excited, and we're even going to talk about a Deep Space Nine episode, although, which is, you know, makes people excited sometimes. Depending on what you think of Ferengi, you may not be so excited about the episode we're about to talk about. But before we get into that, and your thoughts on Ferenginar and the Commerce Tower, tell the people a little bit about yourself, Joe.
I am a visual effects artist and mainly do stuff for TV these days. Did stuff for film before. And I have a podcast that I do called Defocused with a friend of mine, Dan Sturm, who's also been on your lovely program.
Yes.
And we're all on the Happy Incomparable Network. So it's fun times.
Hooray. So now, let me ask you something, Joe. Mm-hmm. I've listened to the Defocused podcast. I've never been on, but you know, that's fine. but I have listened. And I noticed that you and Dan are critical of movies. You're both in the business of show. So do you think that your being part of the, you know, the special effects world or whatever you folks call it has changed the way that you view movies? Or TV shows as well?
Yes, without a doubt. Most of that is the part that I focus on mainly, being critical of that. But, you know, everyone's got time to be critical of the story and plot and acting. Nothing I love is beyond criticism, and nothing I criticize can't be loved. So you know, I'm fine with everything.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with criticizing things. I just wonder, do you think that it makes you appreciate the stuff that you like even more? Or do you, like, for example, many Star Trek movies perhaps don't have the greatest special effects. But does that, do you overlook those flaws and say, I like this despite the fact that I can see, you know, the matte lines or whatever? Because I don't notice any of these things. And when I listen to Defocused, I'm like, I would have never noticed that that shot had, you know, whatever, that thing in it. And that angle is weird. And they used a weird, you know, lens for that thing. I noticed none of these things.
Yeah, well, definitely all of those. Because you're always paying attention to edges on green screens and stuff. Like in the Beyond movie, when someone jumps out of a thing over a something, and there's a background. And
specific reference.
I want to spoil anything for somebody who might have seen that cliched shot before, but it has bad edges. But so there are things that I notice, and there are also things that I can still appreciate in Star Trek, notably and Beyond. I don't think this is technically a spoiler, but the Yorktown station I thought looked very nice. And I liked listening to everyone on the Incomparable episode about it gush over it, because I thought they did a good job. I mean, it doesn't make any practical sense and it's a death trap, but it's nice.
Well, I think that I had a headcanon explanation for that. It was kind of, you know, their technological prowess, you know, they're thumbing their noses at the good sense by having some kind of a giant death trap that seemingly depends on a lot of artificially generated gravity. And if it fails, everyone dies. But, you know, who am I to judge what they do in the future? So let's talk about I did have a question for you. So you've been on the show before. People who have listened know you like Star Trek. You're a big Star Trek fan. I forget which series you said was your favorite.
Deep Space Nine is the one that I like the most, but I think TNG might pull on my heartstrings more.
Oh, yes, that makes sense. But I have a new question for you, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't prepared you or pre-prepared you for this, because I don't do that. That requires preparation and, like, having a producer. I don't have any of these things. if you had to pick – it's a two-part question. If you had to pick a character – from Star Trek, any of the Star Treks, alternate, you know, J.J. Abrams verse, Prime Universe, any of the shows, if you had to pick a character that you would most like to be, what character would that be? And the follow-up question is, what character do you feel is the most like you? See? Huh? That's a good question. patting myself on the back for that question.
An amazing question. I am not sure which one I want to be. That's actually a really tough question because, as you say that, I think about all the drawbacks that each of them each of them has.
They all have flaws.
Yeah. Otherwise, they wouldn't be interesting characters, of course. Sure. And I have flaws, but they are unique to me. So I'm trying to figure out which ones most closely match up to someone. And I think the flaws probably either match up mostly to Bones or the EMH.
So
Voyager.
Do you think you're a curmudgeon? Is that what we're learning, Joe?
Yeah, as you noted with the criticism, I might be looking at some flaws sometimes. So I think either of them, probably. But as far as like aspiring to be, which one I would want to pick, that's difficult because one's a hologram and the other one's a human being. I would have
to... I don't think you have to pick. See, this is the genius of the question, is that you don't have to pick the one that you think is most like you. You could just pick who you would aspire to be.
Yeah, but I think I would...
You aspire to be one of those people.
I think I might aspire to be the EMH, who is not actually a human being at all, and
but
it is a computer. Yeah. He's a sentient holoprogram who sometimes has problems with... His solo matrix. Yeah, but
it's true.
But,
don't we all? Every once in a while. Sometimes I wake up and I'm half my height and twice my width, and then I realize that my holo matrix is misaligned.
That was not a good effect, speaking of things.
I am not in the special effects area of life, but I noticed that was not a good effect. But I didn't know. You see, the problem watching these Star Treks is that they are now old, except for Enterprise. Oh, the Enterprise is still pretty old. So I don't know how much of it is like, was that good at the time, and now it just looks bad, or is it just bad then too?
I think there's a lot of Voyager that was probably good at the time. When I was previously on for Workforce, it was a big, bold, new world in using CG instead of matte paintings for all of those extensions. And so it's good in that sense, but it's bad these days because it doesn't hold up and you can't easily remaster that for HD, let's say, because that was rendered to the resolution of the show, and is not something like a matte painting where you can go rescan it or look at the negative from it and try and extract more data. You have none. So the mixed bag.
So we're not going to see Voyager remastered in HD probably anytime soon. More importantly, we're probably not going to see DS9 remastered in HD anytime soon, which I think a lot of people would rather see than Voyager. I mean, I'll buy if Voyager were to come out on Blu-ray HD-ified, I would buy it, but I would rush to the store. Well, I ordered on Amazon. If DS9 came out in HD, I would eventually get around to Voyager. Like, I'm eventually getting all of Enterprise on Blu-ray because I want to have them in the highest quality, even though I don't watch them until I have to for this podcast.
Yeah, I think it probably doesn't make any financial sense because they waited so long that the market fell out of selling plastic discs to people. So it's hard to financially justify the cost of that investment, especially when you get into the fact that many of those things everybody thinks of Star Trek as being, you know, cheesy and not enough effects or not enough makeup or not enough anything compared to what they would like it to be. But there is quite a bit in Deep Space Nine and in Voyager that people may not be considering, and that missing amount of that stuff is a huge detriment because they'd have to make an even larger investment than they probably had to make for the Next Generation remaster.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, it's sad, but I think you're right. But it isn't sad as Star Trek fans because we're going to have a new Star Trek in a year. Is it, when is it? 2017, January 2017? Is that what they're saying now for Star Trek Discovery? Is it Discover or Discovery?
Discovery.
All right.
Yeah, we have a month and a year, so that's something to pin our hopes to. I've been meaning to ask you, though, how will those episodes slot into the random algorithm?
So that you are not the first person to ask me that. And if you're listening to this in 2 years' time, you know the answer, I suppose. I doubt anyone. Well, maybe they are. I don't know how people consume podcasts. I have thought about this. So CBS is releasing them. They're not doing the Netflix thing, right, where they're just putting them all out at the same time. They're going to release them on a weekly basis, like a television show of yore. So I think what's probably going to happen is I think that – so there's a podcast for people who are listening who may not be aware on the Uncomfortable Network called The TV, which is dedicated to covering TV shows. So I would not be surprised if I were to participate in a TV podcast that was going to cover the new Star Trek series as it comes out. And then as they come out, I will put them on the spreadsheet, and then they will be in the running for a random selection.
Wow, you are committed. I would expect no less.
Yeah, and my concern is, so Brian Fuller at whatever the big TV critic thing that happened recently, but if you're listening to this in 2 years' time, it wasn't so recent. It was in the distant past. Talked about how each episode would have a beginning, a middle, and an end. So that led me to believe, I don't really know how to take that, because I suppose technically, you know, every show has a beginning, a middle, and an end. It doesn't mean the story has a beginning or a middle and end in the show. So I don't know if they're going to do the very modern thing of having these, you know, multi-episode story arcs. And if you watch, like, the third episode out of the, what are they going to have, 10 or 12 episodes, you're not going to know what's going on.
I believe they said 13 is what they're aiming for right now.
So, yeah. So, in later episodes of Deep Space Nine, we have this problem, later seasons, I should say, that, you know, especially the seventh season, there's, like, you know, a 14-episode arc. And if you pick, like, number 8 of that 14-episode arc, you have no idea what's going on. So, that might make it a little wonky. So, we'll see how they handle. I don't know if they're going to make them try and milk them a little more self-contained. I have no idea. I have more questions than answers at this point, Joe. If you're a regular listener of Random Trek, you know that I like starships. I'm not going to lie about it. I like them. I don't know why. They appeal to me. I like Romulan ships. I like Klingon ships. I like the Federation ships. I like all the Enterprises. The Enterprise E took a little while to grow on me, but I'm on board with it. Now, if you're like me and you like starships, then our first advertiser, which is officially authorized by CBS Studios, the official Star Trek Starships collection, is available from Eagle Moss Collections. This is your opportunity to get iconic starships from Star Trek in fun collectible sizes. And these aren't your cheap little models that you get from the pinball machines. I don't know what that means, but these are not the ones you have to put together yourself. I have a couple of boxes of starship models that I bought that look great on the box, but when you open up the box, it's not assembled. And it's not even painted. These are assembled. They're painted. The detail is exquisite. They use a specially formulated metallic resin. And they hand paint these things with actual CG models used in production and photos of the studio original models. I mean, these things are fantastic. I cannot recommend them highly enough. I have three of them myself. I have the Enterprise from the show Enterprise, which admittedly is not my favorite Enterprise, but this model is fantastic. Now, I know what you're thinking. Scott, how can I start my collection today? You can start your collection with the USS Enterprise 10701D, which is probably my favorite Enterprise, for only $4.95 with free shipping. And every 2 weeks, you get a new ship delivered right to your door. Not only is the ship there, but you get a magazine that has all kinds of interesting technical details about the ship, which is very cool. So for details on the entire collection and to order, visit ststarships.com/random. That's ststarships.com/random. Thank you to Eagle Moss Collections. we should talk about. We have not yet even spoken the name of the episode that we're going to speak about today. There may be a reason for it. I don't want to judge your reaction to this episode, Joe. But the episode we are going to talk about is Season 3, Episode 16, Profit Motive, which is, you know, it's a homonym. So it's a play on words there in the title, because Ferengi like profit and the Bajorans like profits. So it's hilarious.
Yes.
And a fun fact that Memory Alpha told me is that, I forget his name, Ira Steven Bear, who has a great impact on Deep Space Nine. He's had much success now with his good friend, I'm completely blanking it, Ron Moore. And they're doing the Outlander on Stars. Speaking of hanky panky, there's a lot of scene in that too. But we have stopped talking about that. He wrote this or co-wrote it, but he first wrote it as a script for Taxi. And he took the idea and made it into a Deep Space Nine script. So kudos to him for somehow making that happen. But this is a Ferengi episode. So, Joe, what do you think of Ferengi before we jump into the Ferengi, I should say?
I've never loved Ferengi in a general concept in most of the episodes where we see the one-off characters portrayed. I like Quark and Rom and Nog to varying degrees, depending on what story they're in. I like the Negus as a comedy element, but sometimes when they have Negus episodes, I question how he is running anything like the Ferengi society, because they sort of go a little too far with the broad comedy and results in sort of questioning how anyone considers them to be a galactic power.
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. Do people think the Ferengi are a galactic power? I suppose they always feel like they are, you know, everybody doesn't like them. And it's kind of, you know, everybody in Star Trek is enlightened and we all get along, well, at least in the Federation, right? But we all can look down on the Ferengi and we're cool with it, which seems a little wrong.
Yeah, there's a lot of anti-Ferengi racism in the Federation, which deserves some examination. But in Next Generation, the Ferengi had the Decora class Marauders and stuff that were a match for a Galaxy class starship.
Well, that's true. And they had those energy whips.
Well, let's not concentrate on that part. they only made the mistake of showing those once. But they had ships that were capable of going toe to toe with a Galaxy class starship. It was a big deal, but their sort of loosely networked society of, you know, daemons just doing whatever they wanted to didn't make a ton of sense. And then Deep Space Nine came along and then they're like, well, they're just sort of these bumbling comic relief
forget
elements.
All that stuff.
And then Voyager even had Ferengi episodes, and one of them continuing from a Next Generation episode, and then another one with them trying to suck people through the Sun Vortex thing. I can't remember the name of that you've already discussed in a previous episode.
Yes.
Yeah. And so they have power and sophistication and can do things. It's just not always clear exactly what that power level is or whether or not anyone cares.
People seem not to care, really.
Yeah.
The Ferengi, I mean, there's a lot of unexamined aspects of many of the races in Star Trek. I feel like the Ferengi are kind of one note in that they are generally greedy, and that's pretty much all we get from them. And conniving, I suppose. Those are the two things we get for Ferengi. Except with, you know, then, of course, Quark is a main character, so he gets a little bit more fleshing out. But every other Ferengi we meet is a coward who is greedy and conniving, basically.
Yeah.
And then, you know, once again, Nog and Rom both have a little more fleshing out because we see them more often than any other Ferengi.
And they also generally seem to have some sort of a good streak to them where they want to do things that aren't necessarily profitable and are occasionally brave. in certain circumstances. So they get some good moments in Deep Space Nine, but many of these Ferengi-focused episodes tend to just be about that comedy relief greed aspect of them.
Yes, and this episode is not good.
No.
Is my quick summation of it. It is, I don't know if this is the first episode where we get the self-sealing stem bolts. I think it might be. And then that's picked up later when Nog buys them from a Quark. I don't know if that may happen in reverse, but I enjoy the fact that the self-sealing stem bolts make an appearance again, or for the first time, and then are picked up again later. That's a highly specific aspect of this episode that I like.
Well, this is also, I think, according to Memory Alpha, and the first time that the dartboard makes an appearance.
Yes.
Which is important. Unfortunately, it makes an appearance in the B story, which I absolutely hate.
Yeah, so let's start with the B story because there's not much there, and then we can go with the A story, which there's also not much there, but there's a little bit more that we could talk about. So the B story is basically Dr. Bashir has been nominated for the Carrington Award, which is this fancy pants medical award, and he's sad because he wasn't going to nominate him. I guess you have to submit some paperwork or something, and he didn't do it, but Dax submitted it for him, which seems not cool, but anyway, she does it. And he's been nominated, which is a great honor, but he thinks, I'm never going to win, because it's kind of a lifetime achievement award, basically, and the other people have had much more success in their career than I have, because they've had 50 or 60 years on me, so nobody talk about it. I'm not going to win. It doesn't matter. And then we find out that he really wants to win, even though he says he doesn't want to win, and he's working on his acceptance speech. And at the end, spoiler alert, he doesn't win. And he's sad.
And yeah.
That's it.
It is a total waste, and it is such filler. And I whenever they would cut away to this part of the episode, it was like everything just fell apart. And I was actually like craving, like, please go back to the Ferengi doing bumbling stunts. Like, I can't take any more of this. Because it's extremely dull and uninteresting. And I'm sure you also saw the same thing that I saw, because I didn't know this ahead of time until I read Memory Alpha in preparation for this show. But they apparently wrote that as some sort of commentary on the fact that they were nominated mm-hmm. for an Emmy for writing, but didn't think they would win. But then some people started believing they would win, and then they lost to Picket Fences, and so they wrote this in.
It seems like a weird thing in general, because I haven't been nominated for many awards myself, but I feel like it's a fairly regular thing where you are nominated, you think, oh, I'm not worthy of nomination, I'm not going to win, so I'm not going to get excited about it. But then, of course, human nature, you get excited about it, you think, well, maybe I will win. And then it turns out, no, you were right, you're not going to win, because most people who are nominated for things don't win, because there are a limited number of winners. So it doesn't really tell us anything about Bashir's character other than he has normal human instincts, and Dax is a little pushy in that she just nominated him, like submitted his paperwork, even though he didn't want to be nominated.
Yeah.
I also found it weird that, so these Carrington Awards, everybody on Deep Space Nine is very excited about them, and Dr. Bashir is like, oh my god, this is like the biggest medical prize in the Federation. But then they announce the winners like in 2 seconds, and none of the nominees are even there at the ceremony.
It's weird. And it's all on broadcast, and yes. You didn't have to go anywhere.
Nope.
And it's just like, okay, whatever. And it's also weird in all the other times they bring it up, except for when Quark goes to him and throws it back in his face because he doesn't get what he wants. The rest of the time, it serves no purpose at all. And even talks about it, like Kira saying your work on biomolecular stuff was audacious and groundbreaking, and it's just like that doesn't. Why does she say that? She just needs to be in the episode.
Yes, she needs some lines.
Yeah, it's a poor use of the characters on Deep Space Nine for that B story.
Yeah, and I get the feeling, as with many B stories, that they were like, okay, we're going to tell a story about Quark and the Grand Nagus and Rom, but we have all these other actors we need to get in on it. Odo's directing, so he's okay. But everybody else needs something to do. So let's try to cram them all into this B story. And also, they meet the prophets, so we can get some of them in being weird prophet-y aliens. So, you know, that checks the boxes as well. But yeah, that's that B story. It may be the worst B story I have seen yet on Random Trek because it makes no sense. Well, it makes perfect sense, but it's so pedestrian. It doesn't.
Yeah.
Who cares? So yeah, it's not the most nonsensical. So I guess that's faint praise, but still. Yeah. Speaking of nonsensical, the A plot involves the Grand Nagus making an appearance. And for those who are unfamiliar with Ferengi culture, I guess the Grand Nagus is kind of, he's their financial leader, which is really, I guess, all that matters in Ferengi society. It's unclear what their other kind of political structure is. But the Grand Nagus is the chief guy. He's always just traveling around with one other dude, though. It seems weird, but maybe it's cost cutting.
Well, one other guy who's a servant and a shuttle, and that's it.
That's all he has.
Yeah, it's very strange.
And the other guy, like, he's not a Ferengi.
Yeah, no, he's a servant. Was it Uparian? Servant who's sworn to only speak to him and only answer to him and do whatever he says.
Yeah.
But they travel around in this rinky-dinky little shuttle. Like they could have some sort of a little accident or something. No one would ever know what happened to the financial leader of the Ferengi society. And you know, I think it's also interesting, like we were talking about briefly ships for a second ago. This is the only series where the Ferengi Decora Marauder doesn't show up for anything. It's like, you know, that could have been like a flagship for him. He could show up to things. Although it would make it harder to abduct him and take him through a wormhole, but
yes.
Yeah, it does seem strange and rather silly that he flies around with his servant in a what is essentially a car.
Yeah. Like a compact car, even. It's not like it's not a fancy car. And you would think he would want to be, you know, flaunt his wealth because he's the Grand Nagus. So one imagines he's a very wealthy Ferengi. So he should have a giant kind of ostentatious ship that just shows up and lots of servants. But he doesn't have any of that. And I don't think in any of the episodes he shows up in, he always shows up in this tiny little shuttle with one other person. I can't recall him ever coming with anyone else. That could be wrong. People out there on the internet, feel free to correct me. But so he's arrived. Something's weird. He takes over Quark's quarters.
You skipped right over the Umox.
Oh, I thought the Umox was better left unspoken about. But yes, there's some ear rubbing.
Ugh, God, it's such a revolting.
Yes, that's the other problem with the Ferengi. Is their attitudes towards females, as they would call them, not the most enlightened. And they're, once again, hanky-panky. The Ferengi hanky-panky is not appealing to me at all.
No. And it is such a very strange way to start the episode with that face that Quark is making. But, that's one of those things that just sticks out to me is bizarre. What a choice.
And it serves to introduce us to this lady who wants to buy these self-stealing stem bolts. And Quark is very excited because he's going to charge her an arm and a leg for them. But she's excited because she needs them for her mining operation, I think. Is that right? Is this another mining operation thing?
I can't even remember. Her family's ship is coming and then they're going to do the exchange once her family's ship arrives. But she wants to sign the contract early before they get there.
And because they need it for something. And everybody's excited. Yeah. And the Grand Nagus appears. Hooray. Quark is less excited because he gets kicked out. He has to live with Rom. Cue the Odd Couple music. Rom is a slob. Nog's not around to clean up his apartment. I do like this in that, you know, Rom always gets pushed around. And he's a bit of a spineless kind of guy, generally. But he does try to stand up for himself until Quark realizes that Rom has been stealing liquor from his private reserve. And then Rom is quickly like, oh, okay, I'll clean up everything. So I like that part. I like their relationship. And I feel like when Rom and Quark are doing something, I'm interested. But it doesn't happen all that much in this episode.
No. And they very quickly decide that this could no longer last. And I question how long this lasted. Technically, it seemed like it was like overnight or something. Like he doesn't really seem to have changed his clothes.
It seems even less. It felt to me like the Nagus appeared. An hour later, Quark is like, I am done living here. And then he goes to his quarters and he notices that the Nagus has got rid of all of his furniture. so that the Negus can work on his book.
Yeah.
Doesn't make a lot of sense.
A lot of people like a minimalist writing environment.
That's so. That is true. I wonder what app he was using. Full screen, I'm sure. So he's working on, he's rewritten the rules of acquisition. Everybody, Quark is very excited because now he will see, you know, he'll be able to distill the advice of the Negus and perhaps be successful. Because when you get right down to it, Quark is not all that successful. He owns a bar, which is a success. I haven't seen his tax returns, so I don't know how much he's making. But he's not, you know, pulling in the big gold press numbers that other movers and shakers in the Ferengi Alliance are.
Yeah, he certainly doesn't own his own moon.
No. And, but yet the Grand Negus is always visiting him. It doesn't make any sense. But anyway, that's that's neither here nor there.
Visits him and confiscates his quarters. And one would imagine that he could rent far more luxurious accommodations on the station.
That's true. Well, maybe what we're supposed to figure out is that the Grand Negus is very cheap. So he doesn't want a big ship because he doesn't pay for it. He doesn't want hangers-on because he doesn't pay for it. He doesn't want to pay for his rooms. Which I guess I could kind of see. But anyway, so he takes over, rewrites the rules of acquisition. The big shocker is that he has turned them into basically, you know, if somebody wants their money back, you give it to them. Family is more important than Latinum and all this stuff. And everybody's like, well, Rom and Quark are aghast. And his little, or his big actually, servant, played by an actor named Tiny Ron, is very sad and crying in the corner because he feels like the Negus has had some kind of psychotic breakdown. And then the rest of the episode is basically the Negus giving away stuff, doing charitable work, setting up a charity foundation, and Quark basically trying to figure out what's wrong with the Negus.
Yeah, I do like seeing Tiny Ron and Max Gordonchick together because they were both in The Rocketeer a few years prior to this episode. Tiny Ron kills Max's character in that.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, because he's the big guy. You know, where's the rocket? He does that whole thing. So.
I have seen The Rocketeer once, and it was many years ago, so I have no recollection. Sorry.
I like it a little, so it's fine.
I liked it when I watched it the first time, but maybe I'll watch it again so I can experience another part of Tiny Ron's repertoire. So basically the Negus has given away stuff. Everybody's like, huh? He's going to give the orb of, what is it, of commerce?
Wisdom.
Wisdom back to the Bajorans, because, you know, it's the right thing to do. Quark says, oh no, something's going on here. I'm going to kidnap the Grand Negus and take him into the wormhole because clearly something's up. Our final sponsor is our old friends at the Intrepid Sea Air and Space Museum. Why would such a museum be advertising on Random Trek? I will tell you why. They are hosting the Star Trek, the Starfleet Academy experience on an aircraft carrier. Amazing. Channel your inner Spock or your inner Tuvok or your inner T'Pol. Pick your favorite Vulcan and channel it and become a cadet. Embark on a 12,000 square foot interactive journey. The exhibit puts your skills and knowledge to the test. You enter orientation. You go to different stations. You answer questions. You get a certificate. Come on, people. And you will even see original costumes and props from the Star Trek series and the movies. Plus, and you know what I'm going to say here? You can even see the Galileo, the shuttlecraft from the original series, which is on display. Please, no touching. The exhibition is open now for a limited engagement through October 31st, 2016. That day is getting closer and closer, people. What are you doing listening to this podcast? You should get to the Intrepid Air and Space Museum. When you get there, tell them you have a promo code, Trekkie, T-R-E-K-K-I-E. You'll get $5 off, and it's good for up to 4 full-priced adult, child, or senior Star Trek tickets. Take the whole family, and you'll save $20, assuming your family is made up of 4 people. If you're the kind of person who likes to spend nights on a ship, you can have a Star Trek overnight, experience Star Trek after hours, watch Star Trek movies under the stars, see the Galileo, visit the Space Shuttle Enterprise, which is a real space shuttle, and you even get a swag bag with Star Trek and Intrepid souvenirs. It sounds fantastic. Go to intrepidmuseum.org/StarTrekOvernights for more information. Remember, The Intrepid Museum is located on Pier 86, which is my favorite pier, West 46th Street, which is my favorite street, and 12th Avenue, which is my 12th favorite avenue in New York City, New York. Visit intrepidmuseum.org/StarTrek for tickets and information. Boldly go.
I like the shot where they dolly into the room to abduct him. Mm-hmm. From the, presumably, I guess, Quark's point of view, since it's so low. And then they just put a giant bag over him.
That's how you do it. That's how you... Yeah. Fergie are small, so they're easy to put in bags. And he's old. He's really old. But in great health, so... I did like, there's one scene where, we find that the Grand Nagus has given up beetle snuff, and, Quark says why, and he says, well, it's a pleasure for me, but it's not a pleasure for the beetles, which I enjoyed.
Yeah. I mean, Wallace Shawn has, an amazing Zek voice that, I don't think I could reproduce, so kudos to him. Yeah.
Yeah, he's perfectly cast for this role. I don't think this role is particularly interesting, but he's perfectly cast for it. But he's a good actor, so I don't mean to cast aspersions on his acting abilities.
No, he gives it his all.
He does, maybe too much. after they go to the wormhole, then Grand Nagus says, oh, I was here before. Quark is like, what? And then they open up the orb. The wormhole aliens appear, or the prophets, depending on your stance, your theological stance. And basically, we find out that Grand Nagus wanted to ask them what was going to happen in the future, because they don't experience time the same way we do. They didn't really understand that. Then they took a look at the Ferengi race and decided that they were imperfect, and they de-evolved the Grand Nagus so that he would be nice. And Quark basically says, that's not cool, which I agree with Quark. That is not cool. Not cool, prophets. And then they reverse it after Quark has a rousing defense of the Ferengi people. And then everything's back to normal.
Yeah, it's very strange, though, because I completely agree with you that they should not have interfered in this manner. And it does seem abnormal, especially for them, because since they don't interfere most of the time, why they chose to intercede in this moment. But a part of me is also like, you know, I wonder what would have happened if the Ferengi Benevolent Association got off the ground and all of a sudden the Ferengi are more Federation like I guess. It would have been very strange. It would have been terrible for storytelling, but it was an interesting thought experiment to have after watching that scene where he tries to explain the positives of being a Ferengi.
Yes, and I did think it was weird that the prophets would just kind of want to completely change someone's personality. It did not seem like something they would normally do, because they are generally like, well, we can't really interfere, but we have these orbs that give you things and we'll be mystical and not very helpful. And this time they were like, no, we'll just change everything about you and send you on your way.
It's very strange, especially when you consider the amount of interaction that they had in the series prior to this episode, because I think like the emissary was either the only time before this or second time since, you know, whatever. They hadn't interceded much. Like they did more in the later seasons. And it doesn't seem like this is a terribly significant thing for them to to invest their time in. But, you know, who knows? they work in mysterious ways.
They do. It was their plan to just wait until every Ferengi came through the wormhole and they would change them one by one? Or were they hoping that the Grand Nagus would somehow be able to affect change across this whole race? I don't know.
Yeah, because if they can see through time and they're bothered by Quark being there, then how did they not know that doing that thing they did before would result in Quark being there? It's weird. They're very strange.
They are very strange. Although I will say, I'm not a big fan of Bajoran religion and the prophets and the wormhole aliens. I am a fan of the fact that, you know, part of the people on the show think of them as prophets and the other part of them just think of them as aliens who live in a wormhole. I like that tension. I also happen to like whatever scenes they are when they, you know, because they're always on Deep Space Nine and they use like the whatever soft filter or something, and they have the characters from the show acting unlike them and being the prophets, because I guess basically the prophets are projecting into the people's minds a familiar setting. So I like that kind of thing that they set up.
Yeah, it's One of the things that I had looked up, it looked slightly different from what I thought Emissary looked like, because this looks a little more different. Well, because they had some stuff where you could kind of see the edges of things, but things were still blurry.
Mm-hmm.
And it appears that's because they were doing it digitally this time. And in the first version of the effect that they had, they were just doing it all with a diffusion filter over the lens, where they basically just make the light scatter as it's entering the lens. And that results in a soft image. If you ever watched like a Barbara Walters interview, she frequently uses diffusion filters. They are very flattering on most people, although they do get rid of all detail. And they
use them in the original series as well whenever they're showing a woman in a close-up.
Yeah, that's also weird. But
it is weird.
apparently this one, and I believe this was also something I looked up on Memory Alpha afterwards. That's part of the reason why it looked a little different is because they actually did it digitally, where they had they'd shot it straight focus, and then they digitally blurred out a version of it and then mixed between the two, so that way you get some stuff that's sharp and some stuff that's blurry. It's not necessarily like an amazing mind-blowing effect, but I just thought it was interesting seeing something they were doing on the show evolve over time.
Yeah, and I think it's a easy way for them to show that this is different than your normal, like, you know, Quark's bar, and these people, these characters are not the characters that you think they are. They are, you know, aliens, wormhole aliens, or prophets, once again. For the Bajorans listening, I mean no disrespect for your religious beliefs. So it's an easy way to do it. I don't know how easy it is practically, but it's a good way to telegraph to the viewer who may not be paying attention, perhaps while watching this episode, that you're talking to some prophets at this point.
Yeah. It was also weird, too, in the vision that he has from the Orb of Wisdom, where he sees Zek. And they go through all of the rigmarole of, kind of Dada interpretation of Quark's bar and spinning him on the thing. Mm-hmm. It's very weird. But they do the same sort of thing there.
Yeah, it's so this episode. I did like the ending. Basically, is the Negus is back to normal. He wants to sell the orb to the Bajorans, and that's how you know that he's back to normal. And then, you know, Quark and Rom are back on Deep Space Nine. Off goes the Negus to do whatever it is the Negus does. And Quark is like, "Sheesh, I know it all turned out well, but at least I wish I could have somehow made a profit on this." And this is when we find out that Rom says, "Oh, I made plenty of profit for both of us." And Quark is like, "How could you have done that?" And he said, "I was the administrator of the Ferengi Benevolent Society," which is hard to say, apparently. And so I embezzled funds.
Mm-hmm.
And then they laugh. And that's the end. We stole money from a charity.
We really grew a lot in this episode.
That's right. We have looked at the very essence of our species and have decided that we like it.
Yeah, it's interesting in that it doesn't change anything at all.
It's one of those episodes where things seem to radically change, and then at the end everything's reset and nothing has changed at all. Except one assumes Quark has to buy new furniture, because we don't know where the Negus put the furniture, and we know he's not paying for storage, so.
Yeah, well, it's only right they embezzled then. So
that's true. They have to pay for all that replacement furniture. Although maybe they put it in Odo's quarters. He doesn't have much in his quarters, so he's got a bucket and a weird sculpture thing.
Yeah.
Although
his
found,
little shape changing gym.
Exactly. Although, as we found out, he is very persnickety about the location of his objects. So maybe he would not allow Ferengi furniture to be in his quarters.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't think that's the main point of the story, so perhaps I should stop wondering where Quark's furniture is. Although I did wonder, he seemed upset that all his furniture was gone, and I thought to myself, couldn't he just replicate new furniture for free? Isn't that how it works? I don't really understand how replication works in Star Trek.
I mean, it also seems weird because there's that soda that Nog is accused, well, that Rom is accused of stealing for Nog,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, you know, I could understand the replicator can't make alcohol or whatever, but why not soda? Why not a case of identical soda bottles? That seems, it seems peculiar.
That seems like right up the replicator's alley.
Yeah.
So, or maybe it's one of these things where they don't want to share their secret formula. And so it's like DRM. The DRM won't let you. It's like the Keurig DRM, right? You can't put other pods in the new Keurigs because it won't let you do it. So it's like the replicators have that same thing where you're like, I want a Diet Pepsi. And it's like, sorry, Buster, you have to buy a Diet Pepsi. You can't just replicate one of them.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's kind of a sad thought to end on. DRM.
That's the lesson we learned today.
Yeah. I mean, it's better than the beginning of the episode with the erotic moment. So.
Yes. I do not like that you coined that phrase. And I do not like what it stands for. But it is appropriate. So kudos for that. Now that we've discussed this, I think I might know the answer to this question, Joe, but what did you think of this episode?
It's not great. It's really
shocking.
It's really kind of a stinker. There are moments of comedy that I like the sort of Marx Brothers-ness of, you know, when they peek around the corner and then they all walk around together and they're carrying Zek down the hall and they got to stop and make sure he's okay. And he says he forgives him. If you don't like chuckle a little bit in some of those moments, then I question your sanity. But the rest of this is just incredibly dull and tedious. And if you actually think about what any of the ramifications are for Ferengi society, you're just like, how does it work?
How does it work? Yes, Ferengi society makes no sense. Although very few of the alien societies make any sense. So like Klingon, how does Klingon society work? Everybody's a warrior except for that one guy who's a lawyer in Enterprise and he doesn't like it.
And they had a scientist in Enterprise, too. One.
Oh,
they
that's
one
right.
lawyer and one scientist.
That's all you need. And then everybody else is a warrior. Although less sexism in the Klingon Empire, though, because the ladies, the sisters, are doing it for themselves. The Klingon ladies are not to be trifled with.
I thought the Duras sisters had to use the, what was it? What's his name? The kid? As the actual heir, because they couldn't be the heirs.
I said less sexism. Ferengi women aren't allowed to wear clothes, so
yeah, well, everything's relative.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you know, grades, shades of sexism.
Yeah.
Star Trek.
I mean, on the positive side, this wasn't an episode that was about Moogie. So
yes, that is true. And I do like the Negus. I like him. He throws a wrench in the gears. I don't particularly like this episode, but I do like him as a character. It doesn't make any sense, but I enjoy him. He's kind of, you know, he throws off the plans. He shows up. Everybody. It is unclear to me how respected he is from the other people on the station, because nobody else seems to really care that he's there. And you would feel like he's a visiting head of state, but nobody cares. I don't know. I don't know how it works.
Yeah, well, maybe that's why he was wearing that hood at the beginning, because he didn't want anyone to know a head of state was visiting.
That's right, he didn't want Jake to write a story about it.
Oh, man, for his blog.
Exactly. So, yeah, this episode, not so good. If you watched it because you wanted to listen to this episode of Random Trek, I apologize. there are worse episodes of Star Trek, though, so there's that. And it has its moments.
Yeah.
There's a dartboard. There's that's about it. I don't know. Julian Bashir doesn't win an award, so you get to see him disappointed. So depending on what you feel about Julian Bashir, that's either a plus or a minus.
Yes.
All right, Joe. And on that note, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me back on again.
My pleasure.